Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 4, the Hamsa Guya Prayers, Text 26. Yado paramo manaso nama rupa rupasya drishta smriti sampramoshat ya iyate kevalaya sva samstaya Hamsaya tasmai shuchi sadmane namaha yado paramo manaso nama rupa rupasya drishta smriti sampramoshat Ya iyate kevalaya svasamstaya Hamsaya tasmai shuchi sadmane namaha Yado paramo manaso nama rupa Rupasya drishta smriti sampramoshat Ya iyate kevalaya svasamstaya Hamsaya tasmai suchi sadmane namaha Yado paramo manaso nama rupa Rupasya drishta smriti sampramoshat Ya iyate kevalaya svasamstaya Hamsaya tasmai suchi sadmane namaha Yado paramo manaso nama rupa Rupasya drishti smriti sampramoshat Yate kevalaya svasamstaya Saya svasmai suchi sadmane namaha Aparamo manaso nama rupa Asya dasa suti sampramoshat Ayyate kevalaya svasamstaya Hamsaya tasmai namaha Yado paramo manaso nama rupa Vaishnavis. Aparamo manaso nama rupa Yeah. Yaro paramo manaso nama rupa. Vasya drishta smriti sampramosa. Yayate kevraya sasamstaya. Yada, when in trance, Uparamaha, complete cessation, Manasaha, of the mind, Namarupa, material names and forms, Rupasya, of that by which they appear, Drishta, of material vision. Smriti, and of remembrance. Sampramosha, due to the destruction. Yaha, who? The Supreme Personality of Godhead. Iyate, is perceived. Kevalaya, with spiritual. Svasamstaya, his own original form. Hamsaya, unto the Supreme Pure. Tasmai, unto him. Suchisadmane, who is realized only in the pure state of spiritual existence. Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. When one's consciousness is completely purified of the contamination of material existence, gross and subtle, without being agitated in the working and dreaming states, and when the mind is not dissolved, as in susupti, deep sleep, one comes to the platform of trance. Then one's material vision and the memories of the mind, which manifest names and forms, are vanquished. Only in such a trance is the Supreme Personality of Godhead revealed. Thus, let us offer our respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is seen in that uncontaminated, transcendental state. Purport. There are two stages of God realization. One is called sugyayam, or very easily understood, generally, by mental speculation. And the other is called durgyayam, understood only with difficulty. Paramatma realization and Brahman realization are considered sugyayam, but realization of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is durgyayam. As described here, one attains the ultimate realization of the Personality of Godhead when one gives up the activities of the mind, thinking, feeling, and willing. Or, in other words, when mental speculation stops. This transcendental realization is above susupti, deep sleep. In our gross conditional stage, we perceive things through material experience and remembrance. And in the subtle stage, we perceive the world in dreams. The process of vision also involves remembrance and also exists in a subtle form. Above gross experience and dreams is susupti, deep sleep. And when one comes to the completely spiritual platform, transcending deep sleep, he attains vishuddha, he attains trance, vishuddha sattva, or vasudev sattva, in which the Personality of Godhead is revealed. Atat Shri Krishna Namadi Nabhavad Grayam Indrayai. So long, as one is situated in duality on the central platform, gross or subtle, realization of the original personality of Godhead is impossible. Sevan mukhe jiva dao swayameva sparat yada. But when one engages his senses in the service of the Lord, especially when one engages the senses in chanting the Hare Krishna mantra and tasting only Krishna prasad with a spirit of service, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is revealed. This is indicated in this verse by the word suci sadmane. Suci means purified. By the spirit of rendering service with one's senses, one's entire existence becomes suci sadmane, the platform of uncontaminated purity. Daksha, therefore, offers his respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is revealed on the platform of suci sadma. In this regard, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur quotes the following prayer by Lord Brahma from the Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.6. Tatapi bhuman mahima gunasya te vibodhum arhat amalantar atmabihi. Quote, one whose heart has become completely purified, my Lord, can understand the transcendental qualities of your Lordship and can understand the greatness of your activities. Om Jnana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. The verse again. When one's consciousness is completely purified of the contamination of material existence, gross and subtle, without being agitated, as in the working and dreaming states, and when the mind is not dissolved, as in susupti, deep sleep, one comes to the platform of trance. Then one's material vision and memories of the mind, which manifest names and forms, are vanquished. Only in such a trance is the Supreme Personality of Godhead revealed. Thus, let us offer our respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is seen in that uncontaminated transcendental state. So this whole analysis appears to be based on the idea that we have a gross physical body, we have a subtle material body composed of mind, intelligence, and ego, and beyond that, there is the soul, which is the actual self, and it has spiritual senses. But in the conditioned state, it is experiencing material sense perceptions, through the eyes, the material eyes, ears, nose, sense of touch, tongue for tasting. So in material consciousness, the conditioned soul is getting inputs from the material sense objects through the material senses, and that is not spiritual in itself. That is, the soul has its own spiritual senses, which are meant to perceive spiritual sense objects on the spiritual level of reality. It's on that level that the Supreme Personality of Godhead can be perceived in his original state. In material consciousness, the ordinary conditioned soul is simply perceiving a phantasmagoria of material sense objects through the material senses. And then at night, you know, the mind takes, you know, those perceptions which are stored in memory and combines them in different ways to make up a dream reality. And that's a little more subtle. It's closer to the soul than the gross physical level of reality, but still it's material. It's a subtle material phenomenon. It's only when one can become freed of both the gross and subtle perceptions that one is in a position to be able to perceive spiritual sense objects, including the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that is the normal state for a conditioned soul, is simply to be perceiving material sense objects or the remembrances of material sense objects in dreams. So how to get beyond that? In certain ages and certain yugas, not the Kali Yuga, it was possible for yogis to mentally raise their awareness from the level of gross sense perception beyond the level of mental speculation and dreams to the pure state of consciousness beyond this state of susupti or deep sleep. But in this age, that's really not possible for us to manipulate our consciousness in that way. So Krishna has provided other means for us to go through this whole process. And what Krishna does is he injects spiritual sense objects into the realm of sense perception. For example, Krishna appears in the form of the deity. Normally, Krishna is beyond the senses. Avan manasa gochara. Krishna is beyond the realm of the mind and senses. But Krishna agrees to become present in a form that we can perceive with our present senses, the form of the deity, the Archa-Vigraha. And Krishna also agrees to become present in a form we can taste, prasadam. Prasadam is not ordinary food, it's spiritual. And Krishna can become present in the scent of the flowers and incense offered to him. And Krishna can become present in the sound of his holy name. Golokara Premadana Harinama Sankirtana. Now Krishna descends in the form of his holy name. Oops. So and he also appears in his literary incarnation, Srimad Bhagavatam. And he also appears in the form of his service, devotional service, that we can perform, you know, with our present material senses. Normally, one can only serve Krishna with purified spiritual senses in one's swarupa, one's original form. But Krishna gives this concession that we can work with our present senses, our present working senses, to perform devotional service to him. And by doing that, we begin to get spiritual inputs through our present senses. And this also has an effect on the mind. And because Krishna says, mam mana bhava mad bhakto, focus the mind on me. So if we are doing these things, then gradually it purifies the mind so that The mental activities are also focused on Krishna. And devotees, they often dream of Krishna, the spiritual master, other devotees. Of course, when we're still in the in the clearing stage, the process of devotional service goes in three stages. There's the offensive stage, the clearing stage, and the pure stage. So when we're in that clearing stage, sometimes we're focused on the spiritual sense objects. Sometimes we may be focusing on material sense objects and perceptions. And the same with the mind. Sometimes we may be thinking of Krishna, Krishna's devotees, Krishna's service. And other times our mind may become clouded either in the waking daydreaming state or the night dreaming state with all kinds of material memories and things like that. But at least in part of the time, devotees can be dreaming of Krishna, thinking of Krishna, Krishna's service, Krishna's devotees. So in that way, one transcends the platform of gross sense perception and subtle mental speculation and dreaming by absorbing one's mind and senses in the subject matter of Krishna consciousness. And in that state, Krishna will appear within the heart, mind, of the devotee. That's the state of trance or samadhi. So when one becomes fully absorbed in engaging one's mind, body, and words in Krishna's service, one attains the platform of Jivan Mukta, liberation, even within this life. So I'm going to stop there. Does anybody have any questions on this? So for the remaining part of the class time, I'm going to give a report on a lecture tour of India that I recently was on. So I went on this lecture tour last month. I spoke at over 30 universities and educational institutions in six cities in India: Mumbai, Chennai, Warangal, Suratkal, Belgaum, and Pune. I was speaking about my latest book, The Forbidden Archaeologist, and I was making three points in the lecture I gave at all these places. I was dealing with the question, how old is the Rig Veda? Many scholars believe it's not 5,000 years old. They think it's far younger, but we say it's 5,000 years old. How old is Vedic culture in India? Many of the modern scientists, they don't think there was any Vedic culture in India 5,000 years ago. Like we say, Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita 5,000 years ago in India. They don't accept that. So I was making that point, that Vedic culture is at least 5,000 years old in India and really much older. And then I was talking about the evolution question, how old is the human species? in India or other parts of the world, you know, according to the theory of evolution, maybe 100,000 years, but the Vedic literature says millions of years. So those are the points that I was dealing with. And, you know, I arrived in Mumbai, and before, you know, the lectures actually began, I, you know, was at the temple there. And I took part in a very amazing festival at the Chalpati temple where Radhanath Swami has his headquarters. It's called Pushpa Abhishek. It means bathing the deity, you know, showering the deity with flower petals. It's really, and it was an amazing festival. This devotee, Raghunath, who many of us know, was there with his yoga students from, you know, about 30 or 40 of his yoga students from the United States. And in this festival, these are the deities here, you know, Radha, Krishna, gopis. And the pujaris start showering flower petals on the deities, just tons and tons of them, until finally the deities are just buried in flower petals. And then they clear them all away. See the pujari there? He's starting to clear them away. And then they do it again and again and again with different, you know, rose petals, this petal, you know, all different colors. And then the altar floor just becomes knee-deep in flower petals, you know, as they keep bathing the deities with these petals and then throwing them on the floor. And then the pujaris get up there and they start throwing those petals into the air really wildly. And, you know, they just go crazy. You know, they're still, you know, showering petals on the deities, but then they're throwing these up. And then they start throwing the petals into the temple on everybody. And, you know, then everybody just starts throwing all the petals. It's just a really amazing festival. Everybody really gets into it. And then they take baskets full of the prasadam petals from the altar up to these balconies and start throwing them down on everybody. And this just goes on for a couple of hours. It was really, you know, really just amazing. Everybody, you know, you get a real sensation of what it's like to be in the spiritual world where it's just a constant festival. So also before my lectures started, I took the chance to visit an archaeological site in India. It's the Ellora Caves, which are near Aurangabad. And what they have there is about 50 temples that are carved into the side of a mountain in, you know, solid rock. And inside, you know, these temples, I'm always looking for the Krishna aspect of things, so who can tell what that is? Yeah, it's a very rare kind of sculpture of Nrisimhadeva. He's actually fighting Hiranyakashipu. Usually they show Hiranyakashipu, you know, on his lap. But this was, you know, a sculpture of the actual battle. And then probably the most amazing thing there is they have this huge temple carved out of solid stone. And just out of a solid block of stone, huge, elaborate temple. What they did is they just started carving, you know, like this is the cliff. So they just started carving right from the top, you know, made this whole temple, which is full of very elaborate chambers and galleries, and just decided to carve a temple out of solid rock. And there's a Das Avatar Hall in this temple, you know, with carvings of the different incarnations of Vishnu. Who can say what this is? Okay. And what's this? Varaha. And this? Actually, it's Krishna. It's a forearm form of Krishna lifting Govardhan Hill. And then I started, you know, giving lectures. I lectured at so many universities. I'm not going to show all of them because it's just very repetitive. But this was the Somaya Vidyahara University, largest private university in Mumbai, where I spoke. And, you know, lots of students and professors at the lectures, lots of questions afterward, people buying books. And all these lectures were arranged by a student organization that they have in Mumbai. And actually it's spread all over India, wherever, you know, Radhanath Swami's disciples have some influence. It's called BACE, B-A-C-E, Bhaktivedanta Academy for Culture and Education. And what they do is near a university, they set up a house or apartments. And then they do programs at the schools. And then the students who become very interested, they invite them to live in these houses. So they live there. They, you know, they have, and they have 12 such organizations near universities all over Mumbai. And they name each one after one of the forests of Vrindavan. So this was the Bilvavan base, and then they have the Madhavan base, and the this base, that base. And it's really quite an extraordinary program. They have a temple in each one. You know, so the students, you know, they live there, many of them. Or if they're not living there, they come for Mangalartik. They have a morning program. They take, you know, prasadam. They chant their rounds, and then they go to class. And then they come back in the evening for an evening program. It's, you know, they have, you know, they like a brahmachari ashram sort of situation. And I spoke to, you know, some of the ones at one of the base groups. You know, there they are. So then, as I said, I spoke at many, many schools in Mumbai. And then I went to Chennai. And, you know, I spoke at the Indian Institute of Technology there. That's, you know, the IITs. Or, you know, there's about 10 or 12 of them all over India. But they're considered the top science schools in India. So I gave a lecture at IIT Chennai. This is the ISKCON temple that's being constructed on the outskirts of Chennai. And, you know, I went, you know, in the, you know, on Harinam Sankirtan in the neighborhoods around, you know, the temple there. So then from, and I spoke at a whole bunch of schools in Chennai, and then I went to Warangal, which is in Andhra Pradesh near Hyderabad, and I spoke at the National Institute of Technology there. You know, these NITs are also kind of top scientific institutions. There's 10 or 12 of them all over India. And again, very good attendance and lots of books sold and, you know, lots of questions, you know, from students, you know, discussion. And this is the base group at Warangal. And there, you know, a professor at the university is a devotee. And he, you know, he's got some money, so he built an apartment building where he lives, and he gave one floor to the base group so that the students could live there and, you know, attend these programs. And, you know, it's really amazing. This is like, you know, they're so into it. You know, they're so enthusiastic to become devotees. It's just amazing. Like, this is like a, you know, they have a bulletin board with a, you know, they're reading. There's a whole list of BBT books. And then the different students who live there, you know, they mark down what books, you know, they've read. And, you know, there's also the shloka memorization chart, you know, with the different verses from the Gita, and they're marking down, you know, what verses they've learned. It's really amazing. And, And many of them, they want to actually just quit school and move into temples, but they have a rule. They don't allow them to do that. So you have to finish your education. This is because of the Indian culture where the family is very, very strong, and especially they depend on the sons to support, you know, the parents in their old age. So their system is they ask them to finish their education, to work for a few years, give their parents some money, you know, set up a trust fund for them, and they work it out individually with each student how much they should give. Then when they've done that, their parents become satisfied, and then they can come and, you know, move into a temple. But it's, you know, it's really kind of amazing. They have to fight to keep people out of the temples, you know. So I was, you know, giving a class at the base group, you know, at Warangal, you know, in the morning. Those are some of the students before they go to class. And ISKCON has a temple in Warangal, nice place. From there, I went to Suratkal, which is near Udupi, and in Karnataka state. And, you know, I gave a lecture at the National Institute of Technology there. And, you know, as usual, you know, lots of interaction with the students, lots of books sold, prasadam distributed. And from there, let's see, I went, you know, I'd asked the devotees who were arranging the tour if there were some free days, you know, could I see some archaeological sites, because that's my thing. And so I went to, before the next stop on the tour, I went to a place called Haspet, which is near Kishkinda and Hampi. Kishkinda is the place where the Vanaras live, the monkey soldiers, Sugriva, Hanuman, Ram, and Lakshman visited there. And Hampi is a place where there's the capital of the Vijayanagar Empire in South India. It's about 500 or 600 years old place, very interesting. So I stayed in this house in Hampi. It's family, the family is Jain family. All, you know, there's a whole extended family group that lives there, you know, kind of Jain business people. But one of the sons went to Mumbai, became a disciple of Radhanath Swami, and converted his whole family into devotees. And so they, every Thursday on the roof of the house, they have a program for all of their neighbors who they've interested in Krishna consciousness. You know, they set up deities, they have kirtan, and just amazing how Krishna consciousness spreads. So in this Kishkinda area, there's a place called Anjana Parvata, you know, the Anjana mountain where Hanuman appeared. So Anjana was the mother of Hanuman. You know, she was a Vanara princess, and she was wandering on this hill, and the wind god Vayu became attracted to her and had a child by her, and that child was Hanuman. So Hanuman had all kinds of mystic powers. So there's a path, you know, a walkway that goes all the way up to the top of this hill. And, you know, I struggled my way up there. And at the top, you know, there's a temple of Hanuman. And there's Anjana there also. She's worshipped there. And then there's a cave up there where they say, you know, Hanuman actually appeared, was born. And you know, I just found it interesting that there were a lot of young Western people in this area, not necessarily members of ISKCON, but just young people who were somehow or other attracted to Ram Leela, and you know, they kind of go around on motorbikes and things like that, kind of. And it's a very isolated area, so I thought it was, you know, interesting that they were kind of out there. And then also in this area is Pampa Sarovara, which is where Ram and Lakshman met Hanuman for the first time. Lord Chaitanya, you know, visited, you know, Pampa Sarovara. It's described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Lord Chaitanya visited this area. And this is Rishyamukha Hill, where they say Sugriva, you know, had his cave where he was staying, and Ram went there to meet him. And from the top of that Anjana Parvat Hill, you can see across the river. This is the Tungabhadra River, and this is Hampi here. It's all ruins now, but it was a capital of the Vijayanagar Empire, which was in South India. North India had become taken over by the Muslims, but there were still powerful Vaishnav kings in the south, you know, so they, you know, built this capital city. And, you know, here you can see, you know, part of it. This is the Vital Vijay Temple. So this is the Tungabhadra River, and I took bath there. But you have to be careful. Beware the crocodiles. So the crocodiles kind of left me alone. Probably didn't think I'd be very tasty. So this is the entrance way to this Vijay Vital temple. Vital is a name for Krishna. It's especially a name for Krishna in Dwarka. So Krishna's Vital, his consort is Rukmini. So it's kind of like Rukmini Dwarkadish. So that you could say this is a Rukmini Dwarkadish temple. You know, built by, you know, the kings of this Vijay Nagar Empire. And this is the entrance gate to the temple. And as you go in on the floor, they have these images of people paying obeisances. I guess that's like means you're to remind people they're supposed to pay obeisances when they come into the temple. And then, you know, this is the inside of the temple, and these columns here are musical columns. You know, if you strike them, you know, they make kind of little tones. And okay, who's this? Krishna Kaliya. Okay, we're gonna. And when I go to these places, what I'm really always searching for is the Krishna aspect to it. So there's lots of Krishna stuff here. This, anybody know what it is?
Krishna looking at the tree.
Yeah, Krishna pulling that, and you know, the Yamala Arjuna. And this, yeah, Krishna taking butter. And this, killing Bakasura. Yeah, it's killing Bakasura because he's, you know, splitting the things. And this, just Krishna playing his flute. And this, now it's Krishna stealing the garments of the gopis. He's up in the tree. Krishna's up here. He's got some saris, and they're angry at him. And this, the Sringadeva. And this, Lakshmi Nisringa, right? And this, yeah, Sita Ram Hanuman. This, Kurma Avatar. And this, Matsya. So just everywhere you go, yeah, you can see Krishna in this place. And it was a nice time of the year. What are those flowers called? Yeah. So those, those nice flowers were blooming, and nearby there was this man. This is a root, and they say Ram used to eat, this root, and I forget what its name is, but he would eat the roots, this root, when he was in the forest, and it's really nice. It's a huge root. I don't know how you get it. But it has a very sweet kind of taste to it. And so he was, distributing that. You get thin slices of it, and it tastes really nice. So from there I went to Belgaum, which is in northern Karnataka state. And I spoke at a lot of different universities there, like the Vishveshwaraya Technological University, which is a very elite kind of place, other educational institutions. And as I say, I'm not going to show all the pictures. They're just very repetitive of this university, that university. And then I went to Pune, and there I met one of India's top scientists. His name is Dr. Bhatkar. He got India's highest award for science. But I met him, and he wanted me to do what he called a nadi reading, which is some South Indian system. They have all these leaves, and they search through them, and they try to find your leaf and tell you about yourself. So, all right, I agreed to do it. And then we had a nice press conference there, and there were a lot of nice articles in the papers and a couple of television shows. And then I spoke at about five or six universities in Pune, and that was it. So, thank you. Hari Bol. Oh, he's interested in my work. He was trying to arrange meetings for me with other scientists. Oh, I want to mention one thing. Although I lectured at so many universities in Pune, in one lecture, I was scheduled to give a lecture at a university, and then at the day before the lecture, the president of the university canceled it because, some scientists in the university started putting pressure on him. Because I'm against the theory of evolution and all of that. Some scientists, they put pressure on the president of the university. And at first he told them, well, okay, let's just let him speak and we can just make an announcement. The university doesn't necessarily endorse his ideas. But that wasn't enough for these fundamentalist evolutionists. And, so they finally pressured him into completely canceling the lecture. And I offered to go meet with the president of the university, but he said, it was a decision made by a committee. So I can't. Huh? No, I spoke in just dozens of universities, but it happens from time to time in India, Russia, other places that, sometimes they try to, the supporters of the theory of evolution try to stop the lectures and things like that. So, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.